Imagine a world where the study of language was completely transformed by a single individual. This is precisely what Noam Chomsky accomplished with his revolutionary work on linguistics. While many know Chomsky for his political activism, his primary academic contribution, fundamentally changing how we understand language, remains his most profound legacy. As Steven Pinker noted, Chomsky accomplished a remarkable feat. He made linguistics one of the sexiest fields around. His ideas transcended academia to influence culture broadly, with figures as diverse as Bono and Michel Foucault citing his linguistic theories as transformative to their thinking. Chomsky's revolution wasn't merely scientific, it was philosophical, forcing us to reconsider what makes us fundamentally human. Why do we treat the brain differently from every other organ? Empiricism has created an illogical mind-body dualism, approaching the body as genetically determined while insisting the brain is a blank slate. There's no scientific reason to believe our mental faculties are less structured than our fingers, hearts, or immune systems. Evidence suggests the mind operates as a system of specialized mental organs with genetically programmed functions. A child born to Stone Age parents but raised in New York becomes a functioning New Yorker. An American baby raised in Papua New Guinea develops into a culturally competent Papuan. This adaptability exists despite minimal genetic differences between populations, highlighting our species-specific capacity for cultural learning. But this adaptability doesn't operate through a blank slate. It works through innate mental mechanisms evolved specifically for cultural acquisition. Any consistent materialist philosophy must recognize that the mind has innate structures physically realized in the brain's architecture. Like all biological organisms, we have genetically determined physical constitutions and principles of maturation. The mental world cannot be an exception to these biological principles. Have you ever wondered how you know the child seems happy is correct, but the child seems too happy isn't? Chomsky's generative grammar makes explicit the implicit knowledge native speakers possess about their language. Traditional approaches often miss fundamental patterns we intuitively understand without conscious awareness. Consider a simple three-word language with only Jules, Chloe, and loves. Native speakers instinctively know which combinations form valid sentences. A precise grammar can generate acceptable sequences like Jules loves Chloe, while excluding invalid ones like loves Jules Chloe, demonstrating how complex linguistic knowledge reduces to formal principles. Natural language grammar is far more intricate. Chomsky showed the need for at least three crucial levels: a base component generating underlying structures, a morphophonological component handling sound patterns, and a transformational component converting syntactic structures. This explains previously mystifying phenomena like passive voice or question formation. This theory evolved through distinct phases. Establishing linguistics as a rigorous science with formal methods, 1950s to mid-1960s, addressing meaning's role in grammatical structure, 1965 to 1970, and exploring universal grammar and the biological foundations of language acquisition. Chomsky's transformations revolutionized linguistics by establishing rules within a comprehensive system rather than merely describing patterns. These transformations convert abstract deep structures into surface structures representing actual utterances. This breakthrough created a new mathematical branch and exposed limitations in empiricist learning theories. His example, colorless green ideas sleep furiously, demonstrates how syntax operates independently from semantics. Surface structure contains abstract properties beyond physical form. The structuring effect of silence through trace theory influences both phonology and semantics. As Chomsky notes, anybody who teaches at age 50 what they were teaching at age 25 had better find another profession. If in 25 years nothing has happened which proves your ideas were wrong, it means you're not in a living field. Universal grammar isn't a universal language, but a meta-theory about grammar organization. It represents empirical hypotheses about the biological language faculty that enables children to acquire language despite limited exposure, explaining why children avoid certain errors and revealing innate constraints on their cognitive architecture. Have you ever noticed that children never make certain types of errors when learning language? When forming questions from sentences like, "The man who is tall is in the room," they unerringly move the correct "is," never the one embedded in the relative clause. They avoid similar errors with complex sentences too, demonstrating they use structure-dependent rules rather than simpler linear order rules. Structure dependence isn't learned, but forms part of universal grammar, a fundamental condition for language learning. This innate knowledge guides acquisition across all human languages despite surface differences. Children seem born with a specialized language organ that constrains the possible forms human language can take. Knowledge should be understood as abstract cognitive structure rather than mere capacity. While knowledge enables actions, it shouldn't be identified with them. One might possess knowledge of English without the capacity to use it, as in cases of aphasia, where understanding remains intact but production is impaired. For problems outside an organism's cognitive capacity, it must resort to trial and error. A rat navigates a maze through associative processes, while humans construct abstract models for physics problems. This explains why we excel at mechanics but struggle with quantum phenomena that defy intuitive understanding. In mathematics and physics, contributions are judged by content, not credentials. Yet in political discussions, one's right to speak is constantly challenged based on qualifications. This pattern extends throughout society, with mass media displaying remarkable ideological uniformity. Democratic propaganda systems function more effectively than totalitarian ones by establishing boundaries of acceptable thought rather than imposing explicit doctrine. The New York Times demonstrates this by framing Vietnam War debates between hawks and doves while excluding the position that American intervention was fundamentally illegitimate. This creates an illusion of critical press through vigorous debate within narrow parameters while reinforcing basic ideological principles. The empiricist blank slate view carries complex historical associations contrary to its progressive reputation. Though it emerged partly as opposition to religious dogma, it paradoxically serves as foundation for manipulative social control. The debate over mind isn't merely epistemological, but concerns human freedom, whether we're responsive cogs in a deterministic machine or creative, determinative beings capable of authentic self-direction. True freedom, paradoxically, requires recognizing intrinsic constraints. As anarchist philosopher Bakunin noted, the laws of our own nature constitute the very basis of our being and provide the real condition and effective cause of our liberty. Even creativity depends on rule systems determined partly by human cognitive and emotional capacities. The rationalist tradition suggests our species character provides the essential framework for moral consciousness, cultural achievement, and participation in just communities. This investigation might reveal that our passions and instincts, when freed from competitive and authoritarian structures, could establish a civilization where human nature flourishes through cooperation and conscious self-direction. Perhaps the key to human freedom isn't denying our nature, but understanding it deeply. By recognizing the innate structures that make language, and by extension thought itself, possible, we can better grasp what makes us human. This understanding could help us create social arrangements that align with and nurture our deepest capacities, rather than suppress them.